Rhoda was still trying to calm the troubled waters, when Drinker told him sharply that he felt the conduct of his firm in this affair had not been very creditable. Rhoda assured him that their desire had been quite the reverse, and he would at once see to it that Roach received a complete copy of the original report. Though somewhat reassured, Drinker was not wholly placated. He therefore made a deal with the company president. As long as Rhoda kept his word, Drinker promised him, "I will do nothing about publication." It was a good deal for Rhoda. The game was now up with Roach, after all, and the lack of wider publication meant that the litigating Marguerite Carlo would have no access to the expert report that directly linked her illness with her employment. Yet it was also an ultimatum, and the powerful Arthur Rhoda was not the sort to kowtow to pressure from those he had employed. In fact, he did not seem at all perturbed by the doctor's attempted negotiations. He simply passed on Drinker's demands to Stryker, the company lawyer. Rhoda was paying Stryker good money. He would trust him to deal with these latest developments. In the meantime, Rhoda had an ace up his sleeve. Drinker, he thought, wasn't the only expert in town. Enter Dr. Frederick Flynn. Dr. Flynn specialised in industrial hygiene, just like Drinker. He was the assistant professor of physiology at the Institute of Public Health at Columbia University. Previously, he had been a director for a handful of mining companies. He was a serious man in his late 40s, with thinning hair and wire-framed glasses. Within a day or so of being asked to undertake research into the harmful effects of radioactive paint, he had met with Rhoda, who agreed to furnish money for his study. This was not Flynn's first interaction with USRC. He had been involved with the firm the previous year, part of its defence against a lawsuit for damages regarding the fumes from the Orange factory, about which residents were still complaining. The company was also likely familiar with Flynn's work with the Ethel Corporation in early 1925, when the doctor had been hired to find evidence that leaded gas was safe. Flynn began work the next morning with a tour of the Orange plant, but his remit did not end there. Through the contacts of USRC, Flynn gained access to the dial painters of other firms, including the Waterbury Clock Company, giving them physical checkups. "To begin with," Flynn said, "I made my first examinations without any cost to the companies." But, later, he was paid by the firms employing the girls. One of the radium companies he worked for was the Luminite Corporation in Newark, where he now encountered Edna Bowles-Hussman, the Dresden doll beauty who had worked at the Orange plant during the war. Since her marriage to Louis in September 1922, Edna had worked for Luminite only intermittently, just to keep some housekeeping money coming in to boost Louis's wages as a plumber. They didn't need much, though. They had no children. Instead, they shared their home with a small white terrier. Edna was employed at Luminite one day when Dr. Flynn asked if he could examine her, although Edna later said that she did not know directly in whose behalf the examination was had and that it did not take place at my request. It did, nevertheless, take place. Flynn examined her elegant body carefully and took some blood. At that time, Edna had slight knee pains, but she was paying them no attention, and it is not known if she mentioned them to him. She had probably heard the rumours about the Carlo lawsuit, however, so it must have come as a huge relief when Flynn gave his verdict following the tests. "He told me," she later said, "that my health was perfect." If only her former colleagues were as fortunate. Catherine Sharp was having a dreadful time. It had been, she later wrote, a very depressing winter.